is the abyss.
Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM for
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yo. This is Reverend Jeremiah Wright. You're tuned in to High Knock. Yo, keep it real, right? You know what I'm saying?
Wait, one more time, because they are not gonna believe it was you.
This is Reverend Jeremiah Wright Jr. and you're tuned in to Hard Knock. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your support. God bless you.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. There is a pitch battle. It has been taking place nationwide. We have seen the removal of artifacts in the African American Museum in Washington, D.C. We have seen the banning of books in more states than I care to count. We've seen the attempt, and in some places, the actual rewriting of history. Let's remove slavery from textbooks. Let's not talk about certain groups of people. Indigenous folks come to mind, our Latino or Mexican brothers and sisters, et cetera, et cetera. There has been the defunding of schools that want to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we have a pitch battle around ethnic studies. Many of us who live here in California and here on the West Coast, where we are heard up and down, have thought, well, we're blue states. This shouldn't be an issue. We're very diverse. And ethnic studies, meaning learning about the array of people that live here, should be a no-brainer. But it is a huge battle, especially right here in the Golden State. And we want to talk to a couple of people who've been on the front line of that. First, we have educator. Both of them actually educators, but we have Lupe Cardona. She's been an ethnic studies and theater educator for 23 years. She's dedicated to developing critical curriculum and facilitating cultural productions. She accomplishes this by fusing her curriculum and pedagogy with community cultural knowledge and a focus on autobiographical counter-narrative. She is the chair of the Association of Rather Educators in L.A. and the co-founder of Sochi Los Angeles, members of LAUSD's Ethnic Studies Curriculum Committee. Mark Allen Davis is going to be wearing two hats. He's in the Africana department, which I'm a part of over at SF State. He's an esteemed professor, a native New Yorker like myself, and a performance person. More importantly, he's an original cast member of The Lion King. So we have got big stars here, and we want to talk to him because we're going to ask him to wear his hat as a representative for CFA, which is our union here, because he's been talking about the battle of ethnic studies, but he also has some big doings that he's doing in his own right, and we're going to talk to him about that. So let me start off with you, Lupe. This battle around ethnic studies, what do we need to know about it? What, you know, can you give our listeners a brief 101 ethnic studies, where it stands, especially with you all being a part of Liberated Ethnic Studies Organization?
Well, the first thing I want to say about ethnic studies is it absolutely and definitively saves lives. There are youth in our schools right now who are lost and at a point of losing hope. And in ethnic studies, they're able to learn that beautiful self-love, critical hope, how to be in community with their own people and with other, racialized ethnic peoples as well, who have, survived and even thrived within these like oppressive circumstances. So it's something that is beautiful and powerful. It is not something that teaches hate or how to be a victim, like it's being accused of. And I think something else that's very important to think about is that it is something that the people themselves fought for. Like the people themselves, took to the streets, took to the boardrooms. They themselves, fought for this. It wasn't something given to us by the state. It wasn't something given to us by the institutions. It was something that the people struggled for. And at this juncture in time, it's beautiful that we've come this far in terms of making it a graduation requirement in the high school system in California, and then of course also in the CSU system. I'm also a CFA member, by the way. I'm at Cal State Northridge, and so it's a beautiful thing. But what we're seeing now is folks who are not a part of that struggle, not even in many cases part of that history, who are now trying to legislate around what it is. And it's just really gross. What we're seeing are folks who have their single issue that are willing to like completely desecrate all of the sweat, blood, and tears that have gone into many studies, right? It's not just ethnic studies, not just like a study. It's like it's Africana studies, it's Chicanx, Latinx studies, it's indigenous studies, it's Asian American, Pacific Islander, Arab American, Native Hawaiian studies, etc. It's all of these studies of racialized ethnic peoples, and you got folks trying to redefine that so that, in essence, they can censor. And so right now, the big issue that we're dealing with is AB 1468, a proposed bill that is essentially going to create more mechanisms to censor teachers, more mechanisms to criminalize educators, which is what we're seeing, like lawsuits. I actually was, party to a federal lawsuit around, just doing good work with students and being accused of all kinds of things that are untrue. But some folks think that if they can, throw certain accusations out, they're going to get their way. And in doing that, they're essentially saying, all the other studies don't matter.
Right. They're willing to scorch earth it because they're the feeling of discomfort when truth about people who have been marginalized, correct, discriminated, colonized, or enslaved bring their perspective to the table. Mark correct. Allen Davis, what do you want to add to this? What do we need to know? And I've been in meetings where you've definitely been sounding the alarm in making sure that people are aware and that we don't go to sleep at the wheel.
I first of all want to thank you so much for this opportunity. This everything you're talking about and what Lupe just articulated is absolutely spot on. Being a part of the CFA and knowing fully well that the actions of faculty are so important in terms of fighting this. The CFA is on top of this and fighting it. Whether it won't pass because we won't let it pass, but the fact is that ever since ethnic studies, the College of Ethnic Studies, and even the creation of Black Studies back in the early mid to early 60s leading up to the strike, was a push from students that wanted to see themselves and their community reflected in how they were learning, what they were learning, and they wanted to be a part of it. So San Francisco State was chosen as the prototype for this revolutionary act by students to create a discipline. The students created a discipline. They wanted it, They inspired all the other marginalized communities and other students. And together, they formed a coalition over the course of almost 3 years leading up to 1968. And it's that agency that the students developed themselves that created the very college that we teach in and the very discipline. Lupe is at CSU Northridge. It's the same thing. This spread like wildfire across the country. And then I just have to add, there's always been a battle to get rid of ethnic studies because it was the students of color, this coalition that forced the state government of California to capitulate to the students' demands. And their demands were non-negotiable. And ever since then, they've been like, no, we don't want this ethnic studies thing. So it creeps into every generation. And now here we have legislators who know nothing about it, trying to determine that it's all these things, trying to characterize it as something that is completely is not. And we're not having it.
There seems to be a longer trajectory to erase any sort of any remnants that would give people a sense of hope, and any remnants that would give people what I like to call generational knowledge.
Absolutely.
You know, we were talking about that. So if I know my history, one, I don't repeat certain things, but more importantly, I get to build off that. And I want to give a little bit more context, and Lupe or Mark, you can add in. I'm old enough to remember going to school and literally in books, seeing the N-word being used above and beyond Catcher in the Rye, but just reading like the Hardy Boys, you know, which we had in our library, and other texts. I'm also old enough to remember when they were still calling Africa the Dark Continent. We're talking about the 70s, you know, and things like that. There were all these stereotypes. There was not an opportunity to always see yourself. Now, during this time, there was the Black Liberation Movement and all these things were happening. But you're a kid, and I just remember, you know, people making fun of and stereotypes being hoisted up. And that was just us as Black folks. Our Puerto Rican folks, mostly Puerto Rican in New York, they didn't have any sort of studies, you know, being presented to them. And you know, as well as indigenous folks. So it seems like there was an opportunity to, one, bring to the forefront these other perspectives and make it be a part of, quote unquote, American history. And now we have folks that want to go back to the good old days where they give this very narrow and oftentimes distorted perspective and narrative that, in my opinion, is often rooted in falsehoods. How do we add to this? And Lupe, let me ask you, this bill that they're talking about, it not only seems to cripple and undermine what we all been talking about, but there's also an aspect of surveillance that they want to impose. If you can add to that and tell us what that's about.
Yeah, it's definitely a level of surveillance. AB 101 says that if you create a new ethnic studies course that wasn't already like approved through the UC system, that you would have to put it like on the school, the district website, and the school board would have to approve it with public comment. And so AB 1468 is now saying there should be an extra body at the state level where if it gets through the board of the local districts, it goes to the state, and this arbitrary who knows who board would let you know if you could actually be able to teach that in your school sites. It's ridiculous. Ethnic studies is internationalist, but it's also localized. And, you know, like what you were saying, New York, lots of, New Yorkicans. Whereas out here, like I'm in East LA, you know, historically has been very heavy Chicano, Mexicano, and then, you know, now very much a lot of Central American, and has been for such a long time. And that has to be reflected in the study. And if some arbitrary, you know, group at the statewide level, which you all know means you know, we're not going to be on this body. There, who knows who they'll pick to be on that body to surveil these courses and what we teach. It's just completely counter to what ethnic studies is. And I used a word, internationalist, like ethnic studies is internationalist because all of us are connected here and around the world, right? We are, many of us are diaspora and we're rooted here. And what AB 1468 wants us to do is to keep everything very like close within the borders, like only here in the U.S. and in California, which essentially is code word for don't talk about Palestine, don't talk about any of the imperialist ventures that are happening across the world, etc. So, you know, it's all bad. It's really bad.
Yes.
Well, what do you want to add to this, Mark? I was going to ask, what are some of the other red flags? So if you wanted to, if you want to connect and talk about respective people in the diaspora, you know, mm-hmm. the African diaspora, so we're mm-hmm. everywhere. So we, of course, we got to talk about Haiti. It played a major role in our history as Absolutely. Black folks here. Of course, we got to talk about Jamaica and the Maroons. Of course, mm-hmm. how can we ignore Mexico? Which is, you know, like 2 feet away from us, we're going to act like it doesn't exist. And how does that reconcile with the fact that in order to graduate from high school, and definitely when I was at Cal, I had to learn about Western civilization. I had to pass a class. And in that class, I learned about, you know, the UK and London and Manifest Destiny, and it was presented as something that was a good thing. I had to learn about Greek history and right. the classics that came out of that. So right. why couldn't we learn about African history and the classics that come out of that? What are some of these other red flags that you've seen?
Well, my mind is swirling, and Lupe has me, you know, I'm so aligned with everything that she's saying and so grateful she's saying it. I have to start with what you brought up, which I just read about yesterday, about these artifacts taken from the Museum of African American History and Culture. I am an artifact. You know, I mentioned to Dr. James Jimmy Garrett, who was one of the many leaders of the Black Student Union movement at San Francisco State, which was the first Black Student Union in America. And I was telling him and talking with him, I've been working on my research now for about almost 4 years now. And I said to him, you know, I'm an artist, and I grew up, I was born in the 60s. I grew up in the, you know, I was a child when Martin Luther King was killed. I was 6 years old. So I've been through things and witnessed by my family. And I kept on saying to him, you know, I'm a child of the Black Arts Movement. And he actually said to me, he's like, you are not a child of the Black Arts Movement. You are the Black Arts Movement. In my whole career, which I've been very, very successful, when I saw that thing in the paper yesterday, I was incensed that removing the original counter where the sit-ins took place in Greensboro, North Carolina, by students, SNCC, would be removed. And then I thought, fine, take that out, but it's not going to remove the fact that I am an artifact of the Black body. I am an artifact of the diaspora. I descend. I'm luckily one of the lucky people that found out that my father told me this before he passed away, that my great-grandfather was a slave. He was born in Lowndes County, Mississippi in 1847. I'm third generation from slavery, and that's not that much.
No. Right.
And so the fact that they're going to attempt to remove artifacts, they are not removing me from my reconciling my history every day and how I communicate my work through my best creativity is, you know, creating curriculum and working with my students and trying to find ways to teach them that they have creative ownership over their lives, that they have potential to create on a dime, and to right. that let them know, and that's what this is all about. They don't want us to know, because they can't reconcile their past where we have to.
Right.
We must reconcile our existence on this planet as an American citizen. My ancestors were here long before him. Right. We know who him
is. Well, it seems like a couple of things have come up. One, talking about Palestinians and their history has been the line in the sand that has gotten people riled up. And speaking to their history has, you know, gotten your Scott Wieners and other folks to really champion these type of restrictive bills. So that seems to be a problem. And it dovetails with this larger narrative that what we're talking about in these classrooms is making people feel uncomfortable. So I want to go back to you, Lupe, because I remember a few years ago there was a school in LA where they were teaching Chicano studies. And it was these proverbial Karens and Kens that got upset. And I don't know what the outcome was, but really what it seemed to center around was in the teachings, they were talking about resistance. And that became an uncomfortable thing. Like, instead of saying it is resistance, which is what we talk about when we have to learn about the American Revolution, you know, it's casted as people are talking about violence against white people and all these types of things, and this is wrong. And I'll close with this. When I was teaching a class on African American history, I had a young white woman get upset and say that what I was teaching was violence because I was talking about Denmark Vesey and Nat Turner and, you know, the 250 slave revolts and the Maroons and all that, and got really upset. And it was like, well, you know, I mean, people were enslaved and they fought to be free. What's wrong with that? Isn't it how people, you know, establish themselves? And she heard it, but she didn't want to hear it and went and reported it. Now, of course, everybody backed it up and was like, okay, well, if you can't deal with history, don't take the class. But that sort of discomfort is now something that folks are trying to institutionalize. So when I'm hearing about surveillance, I know in Florida, people are going into classes and they're recording. They're allowed by law to record. And if they feel uncomfortable, then they can report it and get you out. And we seem to be a hop, skip, and a jump away from dealing with that. Lupe, let me get your comments on this. I know your time is short, but just looking at the fact that here in Cali, you know, that sort of animosity I saw really being directed at folks that were teaching Chicano and Latin studies, just using that school in LA as an example.
Yeah, okay, so I'll just say to kind of add to like what Mark was sharing, you know, the beautiful things that our cultures create, right, that are not necessarily rooted in Western civilization, but are so important to who we are, our essence, and actually what makes us so freaking awesome, so beautiful, so bold and so coveted, right, is all the creations that come from our people and for many, many, many thousands of years as well, is something that is feared and is something that they want to censor. And ethnic studies is really about, like, you know, I may be a theater artist or I may be a muralist or I may be, you know, an engineer, but I come from a long history of people that understood these arts and sciences, and I'm proud of them, and I can build off of them, and I don't necessarily need to center the Western way in that, right? Although it can influence, it can be a part, but it's not the center of my existence and being. And that is what we are doing as a people, and that is liberation. That's beauty, and it scares them, right?
Right. And that's then that's the cause of discomfort.
And then so we're doing these beautiful things in our classrooms, and of course a lot of that has been there's been an attempt to exterminate that in us, in our histories and our genocides and in our bodies and in our lands being desecrated by this, you know, this global project of imperialism. And when you start to like see those replications happening in Gaza, in occupied Palestine, you know, of course, you can see the correlations and you're in solidarity. That, you know, may make some folks uncomfortable, but the federal case that was brought against me that was dismissed on November 30th of 2024, federal judge Fernando M. Holguin says that we as educators have the academic right and responsibility to teach things that may cause discomfort. And not only is it protected, but it's necessary for a truer democracy. And so that case has not been in the media, in white stream media, because it actually is like a protection that lets us know that by teaching these things, you're not infringing upon anyone's right to their religion. And it's not even, you know, it's not your pedagogy, and ethnic studies part of it is your pedagogy, how you interact with your students in your classroom, the microcosm of a better world that you want to see out in the world in your classroom prohibits you from being like discriminatory and rude and mean to your students, you know, just because somebody doesn't like hearing something that disrupts their narrative does not mean that you are being violent to them. It just means that maybe they need to start opening their mind and thinking from other people's perspectives.
Exactly.
Real talk. You know, as you were talking, I'm just thinking about what does it mean when we're discomfort? And the implication is that you're sitting there saying, go kill everybody, you know, and you're saying something like that versus me walking into a classroom and saying, you know, as a man, as a straight male, you know, all you women are inferior to me. This is how I was raised. This is what I was taught. I have a whole body of work that I basically was taught, you know, in school. You know, you don't hear about women revolutionaries to free America. We know about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and the founding fathers. We don't hear about founding mothers. Now we have women talking about the role that they played, and it makes me feel uncomfortable. Now I want to get rid of it, because my whole life I have believed a certain type of narrative, and then I call that violence. The same thing applies when you've been told that black people are inferior, and now we're hearing another truth. So now that's the discomfort, or Latino folks are a particular stereotype, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so this is the type of, you know, battles that we're dealing with. And I want to put it into that perspective for listeners so that they understand that when you guys teach your classes, you're just not pulling stuff off of YouTube and making it up. Y'all, you know, y'all got PhDs and had to go through the rigors. Your classes are very rigorous. They're rooted. You have receipts. It's not like you're saying any old thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, just as somebody who, you know, teaches in these same institutions, I can't walk in a class and just say any old thing. I can't say the world is flat. There's checks and balances. People be like, how'd you get that information? Where is it from? And even if I do teach it, then at least there's a body of work that we can look at and exactly. discuss, you know, which is rigorous, which is what we're supposed to do. And I think that was the ruling of the judge, that I may be uncomfortable, but if you got receipts that give a whole other point of view, then damn it, I have to sit in and be uncomfortable and learn something new. I was uncomfortable when I had to take foreign language. You think I wanted to speak French? Hell no. But I had to get the requirement, and I was hella uncomfortable, but I didn't get to drop the class. It was like, you're going to get in there and learn to say parlez-vous français and all the other stuff until you get it right, and then you can get your degree.
Right.
Yeah. What is it, Mark, can you tell us what's going to be happening in Sacramento? Anything that the listeners can do at this point?
Well, I know that the CFA has what's called Lobby Days, which is coming up, I think really soon, is where all the different campuses, and there's a subsidiary of the California Faculty Association called Students for a Quality Education. Mm-hmm. And we, Lobby Days, we go to Sacramento, and they're all expecting us, Scott Wiener included. And we have an opportunity to go from office to office for our various legislators and assembly people and tell them what's what. And I'm definitely looking forward to attending. I'm not sure of the date yet, but that's coming up soon. But I think the other thing that is happening in terms of supporting is to engage and call your nearest CSU, call their California Faculty Association offices, that's easy to find, and ask what you can do in terms of organizing. That was one of the reasons why the strike was so successful back in 68, 69, because those students had not just built up, you know, a community on campus, they did wide-reaching, far-reaching community outreach and community organizing with communities, schools, middle schools, high schools. Danny Glover was at City College, and he was pulled right into Africana Studies or into San Francisco State College from some of these students doing outreach. So I think any outreach to the community, especially to the union, is so helpful because the union and the students working with the union and their own organizations are organizing. And that's the best way is to, what are they doing? Call the campus. I highly suggest you call the CFA offices. You can find it online. Was it calfac.org, San Francisco, or same thing, calfac.org, East Bay, or Northridge, or however, and connect to those efforts because that's the grassroots effort that's combating the neoliberalism of the state assembly and our legislators. So that's a great route, a pathway.
Appreciate that. That is Mark Allen David over at SF State, professor of Africana Studies. Lupe, I know your time is short, so I want you to get some last words in, any marching orders that you want to give us, anything that we may have left out.
Yeah, I would say we should be calling our elected officials, especially those that are part of the ethnic caucuses. So you can, you know, it's easy to Google like legislative Black caucus, legislative Latino caucus, legislative Native American caucus, and then the legislative API caucus. Call the chairs, call the executive of, or the, I think they're called the, yeah, the chairs. There's some specific name, but call them and let them know that we're watching how they vote, how they support or not support AB 1468. Proud to say that thus far, the Black Caucus, not a single person has signed on in support of AB 1468. Sad to say that I think about six of the Latino caucus did sign on to support. And so you know, let's give them a call.
Just so we're clear, we don't want AB 1468 that's a no. That would be the surveillance. That would be the restriction.
Correct.
That would be the decimation of ethnic studies.
Correct. Right. No, okay. No to AB 1468. The six that signed on in support are a disgrace, in my opinion. They need to be held accountable. You know, it's understood that, you know, if you don't really know the ins and outs of ethnic studies and how it works, you know, you should get educated on it. You shouldn't allow an outside caucus to, you know, pull you in and you know, threaten you with you know, accusations against your, you know, who you are, to like guide you on ethnic studies. Like the people need ethnic studies. They need good ethnic studies. They need true ethnic studies that is able to speak truth, that's able to keep those histories alive that right now this government is right now trying to bury. So that's what I would definitely say. Those are the marching orders. Call all of the elected officials, especially those that are part of the ethnic caucuses.
Absolutely.
Lupe Cardona, appreciate you. We'll let you go because I know your time is short. I'm going to take a musical break and I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask Mark Allen David to wear a different hat and talk about this other project. So we're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
In the halls of Sacramento, voices rise to fight. Ooh, ooh, mm. In the halls that were mental, voices rise to fight. Words of peace ran it wrong when they might be right. There's ethnic studies under fire, history's in the fray. Teaching truth becomes a battle. What will we say? Against the silence in the shadows, we take our stand. Holding tight to the lessons from every land. Speak up, speak out, let the truth be found. In every classroom, let justice resound. From the river to the sea, let our stories be free. For every child's eye open is a victory. Labels thrown to silence in whispers of fear. Anti-Semitic, they claim, if you hold Palestine near. But we see through the tactics, the bias, the hate. In solidarity, we advocate before it's too late. Our curriculum wide, where all merit is scribed. Champion the oppressed, keep their stories alive. Speak up, speak out, let the truth be found. In every classroom, let justice resound. From the river to the sea, let our stories be free. From every child's eye open is a victory. Pages erase what they feel, but history's voices still ring loud and clear. We won't bow to the pressure, we won't turn away. Truth is our weapon, and we wield it each day. Every cup, speak out, let the truth be found. In every classroom, let justice resound. From the river to the sea, let our stories be free. From every child's eye open is a victory.
So we're back here, Hard Knock Radio. Want to thank one of our guests, Lupe Cardona, Professor Extraordinaire, and Mark Allen Davis. I want you to put on your other hat, because you are
doing
big things. You know, original member of the Lion King, man. You know, my kids be like impressed, like one of the originals. What part did you play, man? You know?
I was in the what's it called, the ensemble, which is all the people that aren't the principals.
Okay.
You know, we dance and we sing and we dance some more, and then we move scenery, we do puppetry. As you've seen, it's a smorgasbord of the things that we had never done and created. Julie Taymor, the director and costume designer, had this vision of, you know, not making a bunch of people run around in stuffed animal costumes, but she had a vision using all forms of theater coming from Asia and Latin America and, of course, Africa, and telling this story. So we brought it to life. That's one of the first things she said to us. So I wasn't like Simba or anything like that. I was one of the landscape, as she called us. We are the total landscape of the production, everything around the action.
That whole production is immersive, so every part counts.
That's the word. Thank you. Immersive.
Every part counts. So, right. we just don't got a professor here. We got a thespian. I like that word, thespian. It sounds more regal, in the building. but you're also an esteemed scholar, and you have something that is jumping off actually on Thursday, May Day.
Thursday night, yeah.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about this. This isn't a production, right? It's
an event. It's not a production per se. It is a production putting it together because there's a lot of components to it. But I have been, if I may go back a little bit, just a couple years ago, when I was teaching a course that when I moved over from the School of Theater and Dance into the College of Ethnic Studies, into Africana Studies, there were some courses that were pulled up from the past, from like way back, from the bank, that were taught in the College of Ethnic Studies and Black Studies, as it was called then. And one of them, there were several, but the one I'm speaking to directly is the Introduction to African American Theater, which was a course in Black Studies. And it was written in the early 80s, I believe. And so I took it on and I taught it for a couple of years. And one day I was looking at it and I had a section about the Black Arts Movement, because I've always been really acknowledging the Black Arts Movement. And Leroy Jones, Amiri Baraka, had a book of his plays, and I was like, let me fortify this module on the Black Arts Movement. And so I had this book of plays that I've been sitting on my shelf. I had it for years and I never really opened it up. It was called Four Black Revolutionary Plays. So I opened up this book and I tell you, I got to the last play. The last play in the book is called Mad Heart. And because my initials are M-A-D, anything with Mad, Mad Heart, Mad House, anything, right. I'm like, oh, cool. And so I opened it up and the first page said, Mad Heart is dedicated to the brothers and sisters of the Black Arts Alliance, San Francisco. And I was like, oh, cool, San Francisco, here I am. I turn the next page and it says, Mad Heart was written and directed by Leroy Jones and premiered at San Francisco State College in May of 1967. And I was like, what? He was here? And then I knew from my years of being an artist and having taught, I was a dancer and choreographer and teacher for many, many years, since 1981. And I know Leroy Jones and the history of Amiri Baraka and his history as a poet, as a firebrand, as a writer and activist, and just knowing what it's like for students to experience something from someone with such fiery activism had to have had an impact on the students of San Francisco State College at the time. And that then, so that started it, and that was in 2000, that was in 2020. And then I ended up looking at the play and looking at the cast, and one of these actors, the lead role, wasn't Danny Glover, it was a man named James Garrett. Mm. And I was like, I wonder who these people are. And so turns out at a Zoom meeting in 2021, in early 2021, there were all these, strikers, and one of them, one of the people attending was Jimmy Garrett. And I was like, right. And I was like, wait a minute, that's him? And so we ended up getting introduced by the now dean of the College of Ethnic Studies, Dr. Grace Yu. And all of a sudden, here we are 4 years later, and I have interviewed him. I got two grants. I started doing all this research because I realized that, I just knew it inherently because I know what it means to be a visiting artist. I've been a visiting artist at many universities. It's led me to my, getting my terminal degree and my journey. And so I started interviewing him. I got a grant to do that. And then I started talking with him. And it turns out this man is so knowledgeable and has such an incredible, impeccable memory. Yeah. I started learning about all the people and my fascination with not just the strike. I mean, there's been so much written about the strike, but there was so much going on in the Bay Area between 1960 and by the time he arrived on the campus in 1965, enrolled in the spring of 1966, I was just immersed. So I'm trying to keep this short. So basically in the end, I called my project, Somebody Blew Up San Francisco State College. you know, blew up being in the in quotations. The administration right. isn't so happy about it. But you know, right. when people say, "Man, you should have been at that concert. It blew up," or blew that up. Party, yeah. it blew up.
Yeah. Right.
And then I found article. There was an article in the magazine in 1969, August, after the strike, before the start of that academic year, and it said, "Why did San Francisco State College blow up?" And you know, I was like, I felt vindicated. So this project that I'm doing, I just got off a sabbatical. I've been working on a way to combine not only my knowledge as a historian and scholar of the arts and performance and theater as activism. I'm also a playwright. And I wanted to, I was like, am I going to write an opera? Is it going to be this or that? So I decided to just start writing about what happened and the interrelationships as communicated to me through Dr. Garrett and several other people. I wrote a dramatic, what I call dramatic meditation, a dramaturgical meditation, meaning that I was taking what I was writing about and then putting it, and every chapter will end with sort of a play or dramatization of or an abstraction of communication of what happened with these folks. And it's fascinating right. to me. So that's the story about this project.
I want to stop you right there, Mark, and you know, let people know this is going to be happening on International Workers' Day.
Yes.
So people can do two things. One, you can call your legislator and support people who are on the front line, who are workers, to protect ethnic studies. But you can also come out and see some of that work in action. As you were talking and explaining this process, this is what ethnic studies ultimately is about. It's not just about history, but it's also about a process of being able to bring information, mm-hmm. Bring it in a way that is culturally makes sense for a group of people to get right. this. Now, there may be somebody going, I don't know who Jimmy Garrett is and I don't care. But there's a whole hell of a lot of other folks who are going, wow, I need to know about this. This is incredible. And you didn't have to put it in some sort of quote unquote standard way. You can, as you said, it could be a meditation. It could be all these different things that would make sense culturally. And that's the beauty. And right. now if I want to watch this or come see it, I get to see it uncompromised. Right. Whereas I'm afraid that if I was in another department or another thing, they might go, hey, you know, Mark, this doesn't make sense. Can you make it more Shakespearean? Because exactly. that's the classic, you right. know, and can you have a beginning in the middle of an end and, right. and, you know, and the next thing you know, it's diluted and all we got is just the title, but not the soul. Right. And I think what I'm seeing here is that, you know, you're demonstrating the purpose is that people can really come from an uncompromised angle and perspective and methodology deployed and a pedagogy employed. To that would make sense. Like right. they, like I said, there might be somebody going, I don't want to see this, but there's a hell of a whole lot that just some of the names you mentioned, Mary Baraka, Jimmy right. Garrett, San Francisco State, Danny Glover. Oh, you know what? I got to be there
right.
because those names mean something to people. And if I don't know, here's an opportunity to know about them without having all this prefacing that oftentimes accompanies our you know our presentation. So absolutely. This I think you personify what this is about, and hopefully people can appreciate this. So are you going to be acting in it or anything? Is this you on the stage, or
it's not just me? And I just wanted to thank you, my brother, because I really appreciate you just beautifully articulated what takes me so long. So before I say what's going to happen, I also have to acknowledge all the sisters of previous generation and even the young women of the BSU who will be presenting our current BSU and a big action that's going on across the state. A young brother by the name of Ms. Gary Daniels is a student at Cal State LA. He's been reigniting the BSUs in a program, and I don't know the acronym, but it's called JAMA. Mm-hmm. And so the president of the BSU from Cal State LA, Tanaya Johnson, will be joining us for this program. So part of the program is I'm going to be talking about my work. Dr. Garrett is the keynote. There'll be tributes to Judy Juanita, who I'm sure you know, the great poet who was the editor of the Black Panther Party's newspaper, Huey Newton, personally appointed. So there'll be a reading of her work. She can't be there, unfortunately. There'll be a dance performance by an alumni, Dejanay Joy, who will be performing with her best friend. She'll be doing a dance. I will be performing a part of one of these dramaturgical meditations about Leroy Jones and Miri Baraka and his relationship to Dr. Jimmy Garrett, who actually brought him here, brought him to San Francisco State College back in the spring of 1966. And then there'll be other performances. And then I have a singer, a young woman by the name of Najee Nova, who's was a graduate of our School of Music, and she'll be singing one song from Roberta Flack, the late Roberta Flack, Trying Times, and another composition. It's a packed evening. I wanted to showcase to the students and these young students performing how much agency and power and creativity they possess just by showcasing it. So it's a framework to do everything that you just mentioned and to show them, as Jesse Jackson said, I am somebody, and you're not going to take that away.
That's the voice of Professor Mark Allen Davis. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the battle to save ethnic studies and prevent the passage of the bill 1468. So definitely keep that in mind. But on May Day, Thursday, there will be this presentation at SF State at Knuth Hall. It will be starting at 7 o'clock, and you just heard Mark break it down how Black Student Union and Black Arts Movement created changed education forever. So hopefully people come out for that. And what we're going to do, Mark, thank you for joining us and sharing your wisdom and knowledge on this. Well, wisdom and knowledge, same thing. Thank you for bringing your heart and soul to this. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
From frontline struggles to the people who shine, we break it down. With the culture in mind, truth to the people everywhere we go, speaking truth to power, we let you know. Hard Knock rocking on your radio. 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 Let's go, y'all. Let's go! In the realm of the airwaves, where the truth does spin, Hard Knock Radio takes the mic, let the dialogue begin.
From the heart of the culture, where the beats do sway, hip-hop politics and culture rule the day.
Hard Knock rocking on your radio.
Dose of the real, where the news unfolds, stories untold in the mainstream's hold.
From the streets to the suites, putting fools on blast, breaking chains of silence, resurrecting the past.
This is Calvin Trillin, and when I'm in Portland, of course, my ears are glued to KABU, because ever since Michelle Bachmann said that Hurricane Irene was God's warning to curb excessive government spending, I know that God can send wicked things toward people who do anything that he might disapprove of, and I know that there's a lot that he might disapprove of in Portland. So I want to know if the end is coming. I want to be able to get some warning, maybe get some laundry done, that sort of thing. So what I do is I listen to KABU. Thank you.
This is Bird Note. It's late April in the Northeast. You've just stepped out for a breath of spring air and,
Hey, what was that? A tiny bird just whizzed by like a bullet. There it is over by those scarlet flowers hovering. It's a hummingbird. It must be a ruby-throated hummingbird, the only hummingbird that nests in the eastern states. No wonder it buzzed you. You're wearing a red baseball cap. Must have thought you were a really prized flower. Most ruby-throated hummingbirds spend the winter in Central America. By March, some males are already returning to the southeast, but it's well into April before they reach the northern states. Female hummingbirds arrive a couple weeks later, after the males have staked out breeding territories. Males greet females with a remarkable aerial performance, flying back and forth in a perfect arc, like a pendulum suspended on an invisible wire, and accompanied by buzzing wings and cricket-like chirps. So fill up the hummingbird feeder, put on a red hat or jacket, and listen for a hummingbird coming your way. Learn what hummingbird might visit your yard when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann. We'll be right back.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.